This was a general strike, he called it. He wrote his book in the middle of the
1930s. 5 seconds.
And I think we're having that again today.
Professor Nelson Lichtenstein, I want to thank you for being with us at the University of California, Santa Barbara. We will also link to your books, State of the Union. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock time for Off the Wall. Okay, we're gonna start very, very early tonight because we only have a 15-minute show. Usually it's an hour, but we have a basketball game coming up at 6:15, so we're gonna have to move rather quickly. This is Emmanuel. That's Kyle over there.
Hi.
No time for that. We have to go into our sustaining feature. Films of the year that was. What this is, for those of you who listen to the show later on and aren't familiar with this portion of it, usually at the end of the show, we talk about a film we've seen in the last week, which happens to be an Oscar-winning film. We've been doing this since they started doing that in 1929, 28, something like that. Now we're up to 2008. Almost,
yes.
Almost a home stretch here. So what are we going to start with, Kyle?
The foreign film.
A domestic film and a foreign film. So we're going to start with the foreign film.
Foreign film.
Okay, we got to talk faster than that. Okay.
Faster.
What is the foreign film?
Departures. The Japanese translation, Okuribito, or One Who Sends Off. It's a Japanese drama film directed by Yojiro Takita.
I see. Usually you start by saying the name of the film in the foreign language, but this time I noticed you hedged your bets and
started with English. I figured you'd stop me immediately, so that sped things up. Anyway, moving on.
So Departures, yeah. So
it arose from, a funeral practice.
Uh-huh.
And it is a role in Japanese society where someone prepares someone to be loaded into the coffin, and it is a funeral ceremony and a service that's provided, and someone happens into this work and becomes the understudy of.
What a bizarre plot this was.
It's strange and repetitive, but beautiful. There were so many additional shots and long moments of interaction. Some dialogue, but not a whole lot of dialogue in some of these moments, and a lot of cigarette smoking, a slowness and pensiveness, and as it unfolds, and you really get the sense of passage of time as this practice is done over and over again for various clients.
It's really weird because this guy, what is he, a cello player in an orchestra?
That's right.
That's how he starts off. And all of a sudden, after his, I think, first performance,
yes,
after going into debt, buying a really good cello, they say, we're disbanded. That's it. We're done. And he has, he's concluded that, okay, I can't possibly do this again. I have a limit to my talent. So this is it for me. I have this expensive cello and I cannot be a celloist. So I have to be something else. He just basically takes it upon himself to go to a small town with his very perky and agreeable wife, he becomes what's the phrase? It's a weird phrase of what he becomes, an encoffiner or something. Or there's a
yes,
that's what it's,
the word. Yeah.
That's what it is. Okay, I never heard of this before.
How they translate it? Yeah.
It's basically you take a dead body, okay, which usually looks dead and not well. And in front of their relatives,
grieving relatives,
grieving and sometimes angry relatives, you fix them up and you make them look good.
But they can't see the skin of the person.
Okay, but you're doing all kinds of things under their garments and changing things out, and
cleaning them with sterile cloth.
And the very first one that he does that to turns out to be trans. So it turns out that he finds something he wasn't expecting to find, and that leads to a whole big hullabaloo. But it also put the film in the LGBTQ community as a film to see, just that one scene. So,
and it's like a simple hazard of the occupation, but
I never thought of that.
Is this sliver of a reference and or like a just a moment, an aside there during his initial practice and training sessions doing this for real.
So in the end, what you have is a body that looks kind of good. You know, people say, hey, that's how I remember my mom. This person looks happy. And I guess that's a satisfactory job. That's a success. But the problem is that for some reason in Japanese culture, that particular line of work is looked down upon. And, dealing with the dead, apparently, you know, you smell or something, or just all kinds of, you know, his wife says, you must stop doing this. I'm going to leave you if you don't. And he gets ostracized by all members of the community.
Absolutely. That's the closest proximity where there's this visceral reaction to him having done this. And she's already on edge over this debt he's incurred. So there's also this theme. He finds out of his father's death, who he has been estranged from.
Estranged.
Entirely, but gave him this gift of practicing a cello, insisting he practice this instrument.
And also the gift of handing rock. This is a good tradition, actually. Try this. You hand someone a rock that basically reflects your mood at the time. So if things are going well for you, you hand them a smooth rock. And if you're in a bad mood, you hand somebody a craggy rock, and basically, his why are you handing me a screwdriver? What else to do with this?
It's kind of like a rock.
Okay, but that, you must really be in a bad mood. So he finds out his dad has died, who he figured has just completely abandoned him and hasn't thought of him at all. And when he finds the body, clutched in the dead man's hand is that rock, the rock that his son gave him so long ago.
The childhood memory that he is, he had only had a child-sized cello, this very small one, and in the case,
right,
when he retrieved it after the sale and the debt he incurred and was jobless for a while, he pulled it out and played a little bit, and this rock was wrapped in a newspaper. So his end of that
was his father's rock.
The communication, yeah, that his father had given him that. So it comes full circle eventually goes and takes care of his father's body.
Did his dad, as he was dying, say, oh, I got to get the rock that my son gave me so many years ago. I'm going to clutch that in my hand. Or did he live his entire life clutching a rock in his hand?
It might have been an issue.
We may never know. Okay, you know, it was an interesting story. I learned about a trade I'd never known about before, but I did think I somehow managed to make it really sappy.
There were some really drawn-out moments, and as I said, like, just over and over again, this practice, which is appropriate, but it was beautiful, well shot, good color, and moving on, we've got the domestic film.
Domestic film. The domestic film is
Slumdog Millionaire.
Slumdog Millionaire, which somehow is a domestic film, even though it was British funded, and is all about India. And I'd seen this before, actually. What do you think of it, Kyle?
I like it. It's basically a coming of age and of street kids.
Oh my God, the street kids were amazing. I mean, I know they probably weren't acting. They probably really are like that in the street, but there was such a sad and tragic and somehow happy story all at the same time. But when you realize this is a story about India, about there's just so much going on here, but it's done so well. The soundtrack is incredible, but it's done by a guy named Danny Boyle, you know, who did Trainspotting. He did 28 Days Later.
It has that pace.
It does have that pace. You realize that's his style. And man, this is a masterpiece. This is one of my favorite films of all time. You watch it, you don't know whether to laugh or cry. And it's done. The story is told so well because it all has to do with a game show where it's a game we're probably familiar with, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And this Indian street kid, who's now a teenager, is answering these questions one by one. And the host and the police feel there's no way he could know all this, so he must be cheating. And they actually torture him in between episodes to find out what his secret is. But every single question has a story behind it. He knows this because that happened to him as a child, and they flash back to that period. It's done so masterfully.
True, yeah, that perspective of interrogation, that's where you're the sort of fly on the wall there as he's being interrogated between finishing this competition. And each question is woven into his personal experience and story, and basically describes and explains the reason a person who has his upbringing knows the answer. And he's always speaking about referring to how he answers questions truthfully, and this sort of code he has as a and as regardless of his background. So it shows you along this game show kind of false a facade, the narrative, this show that's all for TV, kind of dramatic effect. He has lived this even more dramatic life than anything they could create on the TV screen, and they're missing who he really is,
right?
As he answers and becomes this incredibly wealthy game show winner.
There's such insight into Indian culture and the street kids and how they're terrorized by the police, and just, you know, the train stations. You know, it feels so authentic. Of course, you know, I don't really know what authentic is because I've never been there, but it's the country I probably want to go to the most that I haven't been to. You just leave it feeling like you've experienced something truly amazing and real. And yeah, you know, there's all kinds of gangster stories and romance and things like
betrayal,
that. Yeah,
amongst friends.
But it's you know, it could be a little sappy at times, but it doesn't last long when it is. There's always something going on. You will not be bored by Slumdog Millionaire. It simply is incredible. And at the very end, wow, they do this. You know, I love closing credits, and I'm very angry when they're aborted or, you know, talked over. This is how closing credits are done. A huge musical number by the people who are in the film, you know, breaking the wall and just performing on a train platform. Which is simply incredible. And the music, my God, the music was just so, so amazing. Obviously, we're going to go out with a song from the film, but you have one final thing to say because our show is almost over.
Yeah, I was just going to say the protagonists are Jamal and Salim. And
those are the kids' names. And they're at least three different sets of actors, maybe four sets of actors played
to
them.
To track their growth over time. And I believe they're Muslim. And
that's right. There's a whole Muslim persecution thing in there too.
You see these layers of society that it's just unusual for a domestic American story, but it is part of what I think Hollywood is growing towards in terms of capability.
I don't think it was British. I don't know how this got the domestic thing. I'm glad it did.
I think it's a production. It's a production finesse or something.
But whatever it is, it's an incredible film. And I really woke up to how amazing a director Danny Boyle is. And even the second Trainspotting film was really great. But unfortunately, we must close our segment.
Goodbye to the Three Musketeers.
And
there.
We must also close our show because, as we mentioned, we're only 15 minutes long. But let's close with something that was in Trainspotting, Slumdog Millionaire.
Run, Lola, run.
By one of our favorite artists, MIA, who will carry us out. And we'll be back next week. Stay tuned for basketball coming up. Write to us, OTW at 2600.com.
No funny business.
So I get to hang in a bar. I go to Vegas to pay us just to forget my scars. Sweatshops have made me shifty. I can enjoy with speed, I'm nifty. I hope I live till I'm 50. See my city girl quit to 50.